Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and welcome to the Jazz on the Tube podcast. This is when we like to talk with people that are doing interesting things, sometimes on stage, sometimes behind the scenes, sometimes both. And today we're talking with somebody who's done some really interesting stuff and continues to do interesting stuff. And I thought you'd enjoy hearing his story and some of the projects that he's worked on. Some longtime subscribers know one of his projects very well because I'm happy to say Jazz on the Tube subscribers were big supporters of this project, and we'll get into that in a little bit. Meanwhile, let's welcome Darren Hoffman. Darren, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Let's jump right into it. We met because of your wonderful film, I think one of the best films on New Orleans music ever, called Tradition is a Temple. And I know that many Jazz on the Tube subscribers, when we put out the appeal for support for the film, came through. And for those that don't know the film or haven't seen it yet, can you talk a little bit about what it was about and the unique way that you made it, the collaborative approach you took with the artists involved?
Sure. So thank you, Ken. And it's really humbling to hear somebody say that about the film. There are a number of really good movies about New Orleans. And actually, when we premiered it in the New Orleans Film Festival in 2013, there are two other ones that came out at the festival, one about James Booker and called the Bayou Maharajan. I don't know if you know that one.
And then, I know, and not only do I know that film, but the woman that made it, Lily Kieber, worked for me at the time she got the idea to make that film. And I just want to give a little side story there. When she told me about her idea, I thought, oh, my God, does she realize what she's biting off? You know, that is a huge undertaking. But I kept that to myself, and I said, great, go for it. And she did, and she made a fantastic movie. Yeah.
Lily's a good friend. She actually sublets my apartment down in New Orleans for the last few years. So
So
like when I go down there, she's like my roommate. So, and then there was also the whole Gritty City, which was about, I think Richard Barber made that film, and that it was about the young marching band community. And it's just really good stuff. And so the three of us had these different aspects of New Orleans and totally different styles of filmmaking, all documentaries. And it was, so the story behind that was that I was in film school at Florida State University, and I met, and that's when I was doing a student documentary about the jazz program. I grew up as a guitar player. And I got into jazz, but I decided I wanted to switch to drums if I wanted to play jazz. And I kind of did that, and then all of a sudden I found myself doing a student documentary, and Marcus Roberts and Jason Marcellus and Roland Guerin, his trio, walk into one of our ensemble, the ensemble classes we were doing with the students. And at that point, I knew that I was behind. I needed to study music more formally. So I made plans to move to New Orleans, and then I took a detour because of Katrina, essentially. I lived in Austin, Texas, and I worked on a feature film out in San Francisco that year. This is 2006. Really great experience. I worked with a bunch of FSU alumni that are now really killing it out there. Amy Simons, who is director and filmmaker, she has a show called The Girlfriend Experience on Stars, and she's also in the latest version of Alien. But James Laxton, who shot Moonlight, and some of the other kids that worked Moonlight were all FSU alumni. So James Laxton also shot with the lead cinematographer on my film. So, and Barry Jenkins, who directed Moonlight, he wrote my film school recommendation letter about 14 years ago. So a lot of my friends that I went to film school with have become, Academy Award winners. And Dayla Romansky came to, she's the producer of Moonlight. She helped work on the Tradition of the Temple film as well. So anyway, that all the tradition, let me back up. So when I was in San Francisco working on the film, we had a great experience, indie narrative filmmaking, really good stuff. But then I kind of got turned off essentially to the process itself, because I found that the far extreme of indie is sort of almost has as many problems as the far extreme of like Hollywood style filmmaking. And I decided, okay, I'm going to step back. I'm going to actually go to music school like I decided I would before this. And if I do anything, I'll do it sort of in documentary style, because then, documentary, in a way, you don't really have to ask permission. Well, obviously, you have to ask permission from the subjects, but you don't have to go out and fundraise tons amount of money. You're going to need some resources, but at least to just get started on a project, just to see if it's anything, you could always just pick up a camera and start shooting. Jonathan Demme gave a talk at FSU when I was there, and he was working on a film called The Agronomist. And that was basically him with a little DV camera every year going down to Haiti and interviewing one subject in a room. And this is Jonathan Demme. He could have gotten big budgets. So documentaries seem to be something that I would feel comfortable doing, even though I sort of decided to, quote-unquote, quit the narrative filmmaking industry. So I finally made my move to New Orleans January 07, enrolled in University of New Orleans Jazz Department, and I started, and then I ended up getting a full scholarship, room and board, living in the dorms, you know, even though I had already graduated undergrad. And I found myself backing into this project. I heard a grant opportunity from the Jazz and Heritage Foundation, which is the organization that does Jazz Fest, and they give out essentially their profits to community grants, or as community grants. And I had already been studying with Jason Marcellus, and I had this idea for a multi-camera video based on one of his pieces. And then all of a sudden it sort of just bloomed into inviting all these great teachers that I had, Topsy Chapman, Roland Guerin, Shannon Powell, Steve Mazikowski. And as it developed, one of my old teachers at the film school said, well, why are you going to make some music videos? Why don't you make a full film out of this? I said, okay, good idea. So it just kind of naturally, organically evolved. And it was basically out of my own need to document the best musicians in the world so that other people don't miss it. And also my own study, you know, like as a musician, you really have to teach, not just professionally to make a living, but also to become a better musician. So,
sure.
Okay. And then, so this will segue into like this software thing that I made, which was even before I started working on that film, I had done some camera tests with multiple cameras. And so I wanted to create an interface that allows a viewer or a listener to check out whoever they wanted to at any time and isolate that particular instrument, both video and audio. So I stuck, you know, a bunch of cameras around either 20 cameras around one instrument or 3 cameras around each instrument of an ensemble, and we created what was called the 2D Music Player that we premiered basically as a beta at the Berklee College of Music at the same time as it started working. We released it with Jazz at Lincoln Center for their Essentially Ellington program. And so that technology was first developed during the process of creating Traditions of Temple. And I actually, while I was editing and still shooting parts of the Traditions of Temple film, literally James Laxton and Dela would be shooting outside in the downtown business district of New Orleans. While I was going into a meeting, I would take a break from shooting, go into a meeting for like fundraising essentially at a business incubator for startup tech companies. And then I would finish the meeting, go back to shooting the movie. And so we were able to raise just the bare bones amount of money to create the software that became a pretty important thing for a lot of schools. We have over 1,000 high schools using it.
Let me just wind it back a second. So simultaneous with developing the software, which is basically musical instruction software, you were also making a documentary about the music tradition of New Orleans using that same technology. And so you were running both of these enterprises at the same time. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Basically, when I set out to do this, part of the way I sort of pitched to people is that the way we record these musicians will yield multiple products. So obviously audio recording, you know, is an album that we're still going to be releasing at some point from the soundtrack of the film. But that music would be then packaged alongside interviews into a documentary film. So that was Tradition of the Temple. And then the same recordings will be then broken down and reformatted in this interactive way for the 2D Music Player. And it's Tutti, T-U-T-T-I, which in Italian means everyone.
Let me ask you to go into a little more depth, though, about some things that you've covered. About Tradition is Temple, is a temple. What was the point of that? What was your vision behind that film? What were you trying to convey?
Well, I sort of backed into making that film, but we had a thesis statement, which was a healthy learning environment for children to learn music is essential to building a community. Okay, so a little bit of mouthful and a little specific to what we're talking about. But I grew up in a place that wasn't super conducive to, you know, music cultivation. Miami, Florida is a great city and has got a ton of culture, but the music scene, just like many, many places in America, is not exactly vibrant, so to speak. And there are obviously pockets just anywhere else, that, like, you know, especially in Latin culture and whatever, in Miami, where the music is strong. But, and especially actually at the time that I grew up there, it was particularly at a lull. After I left, my little brother kind of found a really strong scene. But anyway, I grew up, for whatever reason, sort of isolated from, like, really master musicians that were older than me that could show me the ropes and, you know, guide me. And so I took guitar lessons from the local guitar teacher, and it was fine. And but in the end, it was me, a relationship I had with, like, old dead musicians on records was how I learned how to play. But so when I discovered this community in New Orleans that was just so unlike so many, pretty much any, is unlike anywhere else in the country, where a kid can play trumpet on his porch. It's funny, I was color correcting the film in a nice finishing studio in L.A., and the colorist was like, man, if a kid stood out on his porch and played a trumpet like that, the cops would be called in 4 seconds in L.A. Whereas in New Orleans,
that's right,
it's like any day of the week, there's a giant bass drum being played, cymbals, and this trumpet, and like that's how life is down there. So, you know, so we tried to portray the relationship between the grandfather, the father, the mother, the grandmother, the baby, the grandkid, the uncle, the niece. You know, everybody had, it was a very familial and oral tradition kind of like community that cultivated this sound that comes from all four corners of the earth. And American music was sort of born in the city of New Orleans, as far as I'm concerned, you know. And, you know, so like basically that growing up with music really does help to build a community. And if you take that and look at how America grew up with music being its soundtrack and how America defined its own culture, New Orleans is really, honestly, one of the epicenters, is really a major epicenter of where all that comes from. So the film was sort of it's what you call a nonfiction film. It's not a standard documentary in the sense that, you know, we have a theory and we want to prove the theory and demonstrate this is, you know, what it is. We were sort of making a portrait of these musicians and their work and letting them tell their own story. And so it's not exactly, some of the storytelling is a lot looser. We use poetic storytelling instead of like historical storytelling. But in the end, it was just, I wanted to give a sort of a love letter to New Orleans. And like I said, I backed into this. I just noticed that these musicians are at such a high level, and they should be presented to the world in such a high way, in such a clear and high quality way, but that the stage that they were normally being presented on was not doing justice to them.
Gotcha. That's so great. That's great. And yeah, because the reality is, great music comes from musical communities. The idea that there are these separate geniuses standing alone on their individual islands is ridiculous, you know.
Right.
And it's why a city like New Orleans, or a city like Philadelphia or Detroit or Pittsburgh, or, you know, parts of LA or New York or Havana,
yep,
have produced so many, you know, just produce a completely outsized number of great musicians. It's because there's a community there. Because, as you pointed out, you can only learn so much from average teacher and from listening to great records. I mean, you can go far, but the community adds that extra spark. So this making of this film has led to you doing a collaboration with New Orleans master musician. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's interesting because in the film we made, we focused two big chapters on a gentleman named Mr. Danny Barker. And I never got to meet him, but Danny Barker, in many ways, is sort of responsible for the revival of traditional New Orleans jazz in New Orleans. So he went out, he was a guitar player and banjo player, went up to New York, played with Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, and he was Cab Calloway's personal guitar player for a long time. And he, at a certain point, he decided to come back to New Orleans and try to teach the young kids to, you know, be playing music in the way that he understands the tradition to be. So Danny Barker, you know, taught Wynton Marsalis, Branford Marsalis. He created this, you know, particular band with all lots of famous guys came out of. And one of those guys is Shannon Powell. Shannon Powell is the main character of the Tradition of the Temple film. I was studying drums at the University of New Orleans when I was making the film, and he became a mentor to me. We became like best friends. We really became like family. You know, they say in New Orleans there's a thing where everybody's an uncle or a nephew. So say there was a guy named Uncle Lionel. So you say, "What's up, Unc?" And then you say, "What's up, nephew?" You know, and that happens, you know, across the board, you know. So Shannon became an uncle and a nephew to me, you know, like because I actually worked on running his business stuff. And so I was showing him like sort of the new, you know, he's got one foot in old school, as you would say, you know, real old school in terms of how he runs his business, which can be very beneficial in the new school world. But also, like, you know, he needed to get hip to some of the new technology stuff. And so I helped him with that, and I ran some of his business stuff for a couple of years. And he didn't, you know, while he gives master classes at the university, he's not like a, you know, regular professor. So I would go and study with him sort of outside of the university. And I would go to this place called Donna's Bar and Grill and sit there right, you know, 3 feet from him, just studying everything he did. Then we became really great friends. And one time, you know, like I said, I was a professional drummer in New Orleans and I was studying as much as I could. And one time when Shannon was over, I pulled out my guitar, my electric guitar that I had almost forgotten that I played. And we started just jamming for about 5 or 6 minutes. And Shannon's like, "Man, we got to record that." You know, and I was like, "Okay, man, well, sure, whatever." And then, it was just a thought and then didn't think about it. And this was about 2009 or something like that. And then fast forward, lots of different things happen. I'm living in New York for the most part. And that, you know, just this last February, I went down for the funeral of Charlie Sims, who was the owner of Donna's Bar and Grill. And I said, "Shannon, how about we get 4 or 5 hours in the studio?" Actually, I think it said 3 or 4 hours in the studio when I'm down there. And he says, "Okay, sure, whatever, man. Let's just do it." You know, so we get in there and we rehearsed one time, and then we just knew that there was something about this like guitar and drum duo thing that we were doing. And, you know, when I tried to describe the sound, Shannon introduced me to Louis Jordan while I was studying with him. And Louis Jordan really opened me up to understand how American popular music evolved from jazz. You know, Louis Jordan is sort of the godfather of R&B. And so Shannon, and he's real big in shuffle. The shuffle rhythm is really important to that. And the shuffle rhythm is extremely important to the New Orleans sound. And Shannon Powell is like one of the greatest executors of the shuffle there is. And I grew up listening to Nirvana and Jimi Hendrix and Albert King. And then eventually when I heard Jack White and the White Stripes, I was like, "Oh man, this dude's getting, you know, he's getting on my game." You know, like there's a certain sound that Jack White had that I felt really akin to. And so when I try to describe what the sound of the band is, this sort of duo project with me and Shannon, it's like Louis Jordan meets Jack White kind of thing. And So we named it Uncle Nephew, and we recorded in March, mixed and mastered it in April and May, and then presented it to a label, Ropadope Records, later that month. And we signed with them in July, and the first single comes out the day after tomorrow, Friday the 29th. And that's when the pre-orders of our EP come out. The EP is called Blues, very simply. We play 4 blueses on there, 3 covers and an original. And we are playing in New Orleans. Our first real show is our CD release show on November 5th at DBA New Orleans. So,
great.
It's funny. It's a great, weird full circle dream come true for me. It's like a dream from when I was 14 that I never thought it would. Yeah, you just kind of put it out of my head, but then all of a sudden I'm doing this again now, so it's great.
Yeah, because you started with guitar, and now after all these different things you've been through, you're on guitar with Shannon Powell. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Hey, one last thing. We've kind of jumped around a bit, but I just want to nail certain things down so they're clear. The 2D mm-hmm. platform, basically somebody buys the software, programming and content exists, which they then buy. And it allows them to take, like, let's say a jazz quintet and isolate each musician so they could just, you know, look solely at the alto sax player, for example. And, you know, which is a really, if you're trying to learn, it's a great, great thing to take that approach. So that's the 2D platform. And how can people who are musicians or more importantly, music educators get involved in that? Is there any way for them to get that program now at this point? Or?
Oh, yeah. So if you just go to 2dplayer.com, T-U-T-T-I player.com, anybody can sign up for free and just download and get a few of the pieces for free to start. And then if you are a high school band director, you can apply for the essentially Ellington program through Jazz at Lincoln Center, and then you get all of that content all for free. And then if you, there is stuff for purchase within the app, you know, the stuff that's, you know, that goes alongside the books at Berklee College of Music for all the essential grooves of contemporary music. But yeah, studioplayer.com, you just go on there and you like exactly what you said, you can isolate both the audio and the video of each particular instrument, and you could slow it down, you could loop sections, and you could read the sheet music. It's not meant to instruct you specifically, but it's meant to give you a platform for you to dissect it and you know, kind of absorb the information in your own way.
Right, which is, you know, that dissecting is a really important part of learning music.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just seeing how it's put together. And it's kind of hard to write about. It's something that you have to see, which is why that, again, goes to that community thing that you were talking about earlier, New Orleans being such a strong community. Young people can just go out and see live music in their neighborhoods almost every day of the week. It's happening all around them. So it's not such a mysterious thing. And then for artists and groups that might want to work with you at the Guava Studio and Guava Records, how do they find out more about that?
Well, so we can follow us on Instagram at Guava Records. You can come to our webpage. We have two basically that are kind of come together. There's guava-studio.com, and then there's guavarecords.com. But, you know, there's contact pages on there on both of those. And we are also on Facebook as Guava Records. So, you know, we have a YouTube channel, Guava Records, as well. And there's we've already put out at least one song from our first 9 artists, and we put out one live at Guava EP, and we've already recorded about 14 or 15 different artists. But yeah, I mean, basically just do a search for Guava Records or Guava Studio, and you should be able to, we should pop up pretty quick. So, you know, if any artists want to either come and record there or be considered to do one of our live at Guava sessions, please reach out.
Great. Well, Darren Hoffman, it's been a pleasure learning all about your vast variety of activities, and it's interesting to see how they all actually weave together into one picture. And good luck with the new record, and good luck with the new label, too. And, you know, we'll have links at the bottom of this interview where people can click to go to the various things. But I strongly encourage everybody to see Tradition as a Temple. Is that available on DVD? Can people go somewhere and buy it?
Yeah, well, let's see here. Yes, you go on Amazon. They have, I mean, it's on iTunes and, you know, all the digital platforms to start. But I think Amazon, there's a way to do like a physical DVD purchase. And
great.
So you can do it that way. And I just got to plug one more time. It's UncleNephewMusic.com. And we're also on Instagram.
Yes.
UncleNephewMusic. Since we have the release coming up Friday and the first single, Shannon would be it. A little peeved if I didn't do the extra plug for that. You know, I got to say that has become sort of a full circle for all these projects in a big way for me, because, you know, I sort of backed into this project as well. But like now I actually get to perform music alongside one of the best musicians in the world. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, for people that may not know Shannon Powell's work, because he is a New Orleans guy and he certainly does travel and he plays all the big festivals. But he's not, you know, he's not playing, you know, all the clubs in the country. He's not doing that kind of touring. So you may not know his work. His work is amazing. And it's a big deal that he and Darren hooked up for this very interesting record. I mean, wow, I can't remember the last guitar drum duo I've heard on record. So great. Well, Darren, thanks again. And we'll be in touch.
Awesome. Thank you, Ken. Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.